Chapter 22. 8th Justinian. Cool today for the season, which means I've only had to change undershirts twice from perspiration. The first entry in a new volume is always one of my favorites. Something about the uncracked spine, the smell of clean parchment not yet grimed along the edges, the spell of wondering what might happen to fill the rest of it. I tucked the last one on its shelf this morning after I closed it out and stood a moment admiring the row after. 2 dozen lovely little leather bindings, all lined up soldierly, red and gold and brown and black and even Kirkwallian and orange, thanks to a particularly generous moment from Aveline after her captaincy ceremony. I had a shelf like this in Lothering, too. I started keeping journals when I was... I hardly know. 13, perhaps? 14? Old enough to form cogent thoughts, young enough that my terribly enormous fears barely spanned the fields to the creek behind the house. Young enough that I still pretended to be angry when Carver looked through the pages, though I was secretly flattered by the jealous attention, much easier to admit in 2 decades of hindsight. Mother encouraged the habit, thought it might improve my penmanship. It did, as it happened, though it also improved my tendency to practice witticisms in print first before testing them on my siblings. Poor Carver. Poor Bethany. However did we make it out of childhood together, all under one roof? That shelf is ash now, I suppose. We saw the house burning from the road. Saw the darkspawn slithering over the water wheel Da had set up at the creek. I knew the curtains Mother made were alight. I watched the yellow print go black with char. I can't imagine the rest of the house didn't burn with them. We took so little with us. I wish I could read them again. Bethany lived in those pages, if nothing else. But wishes and fishes and an infinite sea. Arana's brought tea and the dog needs a walk. 3rd shirt of the day. Here we come. 12th Justinian. Evening. Stifling as a Ferelden oven on a feast day, and just as thick with the inexplicable odor of turnips and gravy. Lovely morning. Quiet afternoon, for once. Had a few jobs out on the coast. Nothing terribly onerous. More wonderfully, the sea was cool and salty, and the spray was marvelous on our sweating faces after we tipped over the last of the bodies. I offered for us all to go swimming, but instead we just sat on a low black cliff and watched the water for a while, talking of nothing in particular. Meryl was weaving flower stems together to make a little green net. Isabella took it after a bit and started tying seagrass to its edges for a fringe. It was bleached by the sun and a touch stiff, but it still drooped magnificently when I held it over Fenris's eyes like a little veil, like the ones the sisters sometimes wear in Saturnalia. He must have been in a markedly good temper. He tolerated it for nearly half a minute before brushing me away, and even then he was smiling. I can't remember the last time he and Meryl shared in a joke, even something as small as this. Maybe several months ago at Wicked Grace, when Isabella dropped her hidden Angel of Death card by accident when she was fishing out her rays from her bodice, and Meryl puffed a bit of magic at it before Isabella noticed to send it flying across the table. Fenris caught it and tucked it into his cuisse quick as lightning, and by the time Isabella realized it was missing, we were 3 hands in and drunk enough to reveal the secret immediately. Even Fenris's stone face gave way like wet clay when I plucked it out of his collar. Even Anders was laughing. Raucous, too. Throwing back his head and tears squeezing out of his eyes. Was that the last time I saw him laugh? Later. Early. Woke from a dream and couldn't sleep again. Fenris is still out like a doused torch. His arm was so heavy on my waist I couldn't lift it and had to roll away from the weight instead, like a little Ferelden sausage on a turning spit. It wasn't even a bad dream, just one of those quiet ones that make you rueful nostalgic. The little house in Lothering, curtains and all, and Mother and Da were there, and Bethany, and Carver covered in mud for some reason, and we were sitting down to table when the front door opened and Fenris came in to join us. Snow blew in with him, and he stamped his feet, booted, And Bethany laughed as she helped him with his scarf, and Carver dished him a plate and slapped him on the back when he sat down next to me. Dal was smiling over his glass, and he winked at me as Mother chattered about the journey and the roads and grandchildren. Funnily enough, it didn't hurt at all when I woke. I thought it would. I lay there waiting for the iron clench, and it never came. It was only warm, a little candle in a window you might glance into from the evening street, a glimpse of a life that might have been, once, but has long passed by, and then you walk on your way again, gladdened for having seen it. Fenris has at last mumbled a protest at the mage light. I think I'll try to sleep again. 15th Justinian. Hot and clear. Not a cloud for miles and miles. I bet I could see Amaranthine from the top of the Chantry Spire if I tried. I should very much like to take a shovelful of nug dung and liberally coat the front door of every gossiping noblewoman in this city. Have they nothing better to do? Word has spread, apparently, that the champion has taken an elf for a lover. One would think his semi-permanent residence at the mansion and his attendance at Pellery and Jewel's wedding hand-in-hand with me would have been clue enough, but these have apparently been hitherto ascribed to mildly inappropriate servitude. A natural assumption, it seems, given his master is a Ferelden dog lord with no higher aspirations than an herb garden which doesn't wilt in summer and blood-stainless pants. Lord Stinton fucking Forrester and his hideous mother came today to tell me, in essence anyway, that the entire neighborhood has somehow seen me kissing Fenris the other evening at the wall which leads down to the Hightown Market Square, the one all covered in ivy and turned at an angle from the main stairs. Frankly, it's rather private from prying eyes, especially when one is doing one's covert kissing in the dark as we were, so I'm not entirely certain how we are so acutely observed, unless Stinton lurks more in shadows than he lets on. I think the master Fenris was out visiting Sebastian. I don't think he'd have been angry. For all his occasional acrimony, he can be remarkably diffident when it comes to his own social defense, as if he's never entirely sure what he's due. Worse, he might have believed them, even for the briefest moment, and all the wrath of the Maigret upended over their entitled, mercenary, cruel heads might not have undone the wound. Stinton cried. Little boy that he is, soft-handed and soft-brained, his head full of his mother's stuffing. I pitied him at the end, though I didn't regret the anger. Lady Audrey sat cold as marble, her eyes wide at my language, or my general coarseness, possibly, given I was still wearing the stained house-robe from last night's midnight stew-snack, and when I at last told her I would no more welcome her advice on my bedfellows than on how to slaughter a dozen men with fire and a 6-inch blade without their noticing, since she clearly was so interested in speaking of things she knew nothing about, she sucked in her cheeks so hard she looked like one of those little eyeless dolls Xenon keeps at the Emporium to dissuade theft. She told me I was poisoning the streets of Hightown. I told her I was about to poison her right off my sofa if she didn't leave. Stinton apologized in a whisper on their way out, though he didn't say for what. Arana looked almost angry as she shut the door behind them. Huh. Magnanimous as I am, I can admit that was the most impressive flounce I've ever seen. Even the Delancets were never so Orlesian in their exempt. 16th Justinian. Early. Steaming hot again. Light clouds. I told Fenris an abbreviated version when he got home. We then spent the rest of the afternoon refreshing the lyrium of his tattoos. I was right. It took me significantly less time this go-around. Or it would have, at least, if I hadn't stopped to lick most of the tattoos as I cleansed them. And the rest of the evening refreshing ourselves with each other. I think I can write without blushing that the toy Isabella suggested to us is an unequivocal success. It seems the blush marches on impassively, regardless of my wishes. Well, so be it. I will not be ashamed within these pages that my lover brings me pleasure, and I take pleasure in giving him his. I worried at the start, you know? Oh, all the usual things. The fears that I might somehow remind him of Daenerys, that he might not recognize the difference between an enraged mage sapping the lyrium dry and a mage caught up in the throes of, well, something infinitely more pleasant. That Daenerys might have embedded certain cruel proclivities deeper even than I could reach. everything which comes with taking a man who is a slave as a lover. I was more than willing to try because, well, Maker, look at him. But what if... I asked him last night where he learned to be gentle. He was quiet a long time. Then he said he wasn't sure. He said Daenerys could be gentle when he wanted, when Fenris had pleased him, though it was still a selfish sort of kindness with no consideration for Fenris in the offering, if that makes sense. He said he saw slaves, sometimes, with other slaves, despite that it was a temerarious thing and as prone to pain as his own, though for different reasons. I asked if the Fog Warriors had been gentle. He said yes, and his eyes softened the way they always do when he speaks of them, and he fingered the amulet we'd found together in Norlay. Shameless, too, he added, and laughed. My heart hurt, it swelled so quickly, and I asked him if he would show me someday what he saw. Someday, he promised, and then he kissed me and set the lyrium blazing, and I forgot quite everything else almost immediately. He knows so well how to distract me now, and I can hardly help but encourage it. I am in many ways a selfish lover myself, and I know he finds immense satisfaction in striking me dumb however he can. Somewhere in these journals is our first meeting. It might have even been the start of the new set I began here in Kirkwall. I wonder, if I went back and read it now, could I know? Could I see all the ways it would wend together and apart again? All the ways it would be wonderful and all the ways it would hurt, desperately. It was worth it. If nothing else, I know every moment was worth this. Twenty-fifth Justinian. Still hot and flaring hotter, along with the tempers of every scorching Templar and mage in the city. Orsino has written me. I wish he hadn't. He wants me to come to the gallows tonight and speak to him. He says Meredith has gone mad. I don't want to be part of this. Anders was with me when I read the letter and he hardly reacted at all. He's been nothing but cold rage for weeks, and when I read the last line he gave only a bitter scoff. He's only just now noticed, he said, and laughed. It was not a kind laugh, and it echoed on the rocks of the wounded coast like a bad copper that refused to disappear. Isabella just looked uneasy, and Varric said we ought to get back to the city as soon as we could. We passed a group of Templars in Darktown on the way back. They all turned their heads in silence to watch us pass. They patrol now like guardsmen, though Aveline swears she stamps it out whenever she sees it and will not uphold arrests they bring to her. They watched us in silence, and I could feel the hostility in their eyes like the burn off ice. I cannot describe in words how much I do not wish to go to the gallows. This city is a maw, endlessly gorging itself on our pain, and everything in me says this meeting will tip a balance one way or another to feed the city further. Fenris says he'll go with me. Aveline, too, as she fears Meredith attempting to seize what's left of the unclaimed power in Kirkwall. Varric just wants to watch it happen, I think. There's something tight and hot in the air, like a wire out of a forge drawn white as diamonds, and it's been stretching and stretching for too long. For years, maybe. Something is going to snap tonight. Well, what am I good for, if not helping people and killing people? Might as well see which will be most useful when Kirkwall comes collecting its due at last. Later. Elthena is dead. Anders. His name is scratched out. The Chantry. Anders. His name is scratched out. I wanted to kill him. I let him go. Sebastian left. He was enraged. I did that to him. He said he would... Oh, Anders, how could you have... We're trapped in the gallows with a dozen circle mages. We ran through Lowtown and the docks. Carver's here. I would not slaughter the mages for her, and Meredith is coming with every Templar in the city to slaughter us instead. We're just waiting. I want to go and meet them, but Fenris says we're more defensible here. She called the rite of annulment. Fenris says... I can hear pounding on the gates. I don't know what time it is. Near dawn. We're on Isabella's ship, sailing who knows where. Away. Fenris is here with me, standing at the rail and watching the seas behind as I write because my man is sapped dead to ashes and there's not a damn thing I could do for anyone but sit here and see blood. Meryl is here too, and Carver, and Varric. Aveline stayed. Anders... Maker knows where Anders is gone. Sebastian's probably whipping a horse into a frenzy on some northward road to raise a Starkhaven army in revenge. He sang the chant to me, held my hands when my mother died. He made pancakes for all of us that morning after Saturnalia. He gave me gifts on the Annams and told me he trusted me, and we walked Sundermount once arm in arm because it made him laugh. Meredith is dead. She went mad. Orsino went mad, and he is dead too. Kirkwall glories in its feasting tonight. Anders... I've lost track of the days. 3 we've been on the water, I think. Anders blew up the chantry. The Celepetre, the Trakestone. He used me. Used my affection for him. Or at least for who he used to be. He killed Elthina and a dozen sisters preparing for evening vespers. Scarlet light blossomed into the sky when it happened and blew a ring of rubble into the city around us. I have no idea if others died in the wake. Probably so. Meredith stabbed me as I fought her at the end. It reminded me of the arrow shock, but this time I've no Anders to take the weight of the healing for me. Just my own blunt instrument and enough regrets to bend the back of a high dragon. This is such a mess. What a burning mess I've made of all this. We've stopped in Ostwick for supplies and to post a few inconspicuous letters. The postmaster says it's the 30th of Justinian. 5 days since... The last 3 words are scratched out. Fenris has gone into town with Carver to see what news they can find. Meryl is in the galley trying to make something edible. Let me try to make sense of this. We went to the gallows. A mage there sent us to Lowtown, where we met Orsino and Meredith in high dudgeon and higher argument. They fought. I took sides. Anders intervened and said there could be no half measures, no peace. The chantry exploded. Elthina died, and the sisters with her. I told Meredith I would not allow her to kill every mage in Kirkwall because of the actions of one madman. Anders flinched when I said it, and I was glad it hurt him. She left to gather her army. Orsino asked me to deal with my mess, though not in so many words. Sebastian was furious. He wanted to kill Anders in that moment. He would have, if I hadn't stopped him. I think he only refrained because he thought I would do it myself. I was going to kill him. I had the knife in my hand. He sat before me like a prisoner awaiting execution and told me he deserved it. He did deserve it. Celepetre and Drakestone, and my insipid, bumbling distraction of a conversation with Elthina. No thought in my head that I was consigning her to death with every word. I did not love Elthina. Not in the way Sebastian did. She let Patrice die, which I was glad of, and she gave Sebastian a heart when he needed one. She fed the poor and housed the homeless and led the pyreside service for Mother when she died. She stood aside and watched Meredith and Orsino tear the city apart and did nothing. She placated and soothed and murmured and did not act and... Flames... This hardly matters, does it? She died, and any hope for peace died with her. There can be no peace, he said. I called him a murderer to his face. He agreed with me, and he was ready to die at my hand. He saved Carver's life in the Deep Roads for my sake, and he played Wicked Grace with us and brought us drinks and saved my life 1,000,000 times over the years. He kept me alive after the air shock. He helped the poor of Darktown for a decade. We danced the Remigold together in Saturnalia. He was my friend. I couldn't kill him in the end. I tried. My arm would not move, and Toby came up and leaned heavy on my knee and whined. I couldn't kill him. I told him to leave and never come back. I never wanted to see his face again. Sebastian shouted at me. It all fell apart so quickly. Sebastian left in a black rage. He will return with an army to the city to... I don't even know. To raise it to the ground, perhaps. To finish what Meredith began. To annex it into Starkhaven's rule and come down with an iron fist upon all those unholy in its borders. What revenge would satisfy him? Even the Harrimans came up empty in the end, when we learned the demon was behind it and taking their lives became a hollow thing. I don't think I'll see him again without fury between us. I loved him, as I loved Anders, and I've lost them both. Maker, if only I could lay this work at the feet of a demon. If only I could find one clear spark and say this was the cause, this evil, and no other. Even justice's wrath is not enough to bear the blame alone. Fenris is back. He says word of Kirkwall's uprising has spread quickly. The Seekers are looking for me. There's a reward. We'll take to the water again within the hour. 1,000 sovereigns I'm worth. Alive, at least. No word on the price for the dead. First solace. A clear day, cool, with a southerly breeze. Carver has decided I have, in his words, moped quite enough about all this, and has taken me under his arm and wrapped my head with his knuckles until I cried uncle 3 times. Fenris only watched, bastard that he is, and by the time Carver was satisfied, I was red-faced and livid. Nice to feel something, though. Anything, to be honest. And when he pulled me into a monstrous bear hug after it all, it was all I could do not to break down and burst into very soggy tears right in the middle of his fancy warden blues. I had no idea he'd been so worried. Damn Anders! Damn them all! Damn Meredith, Norsino, and the whole bloody circle! This didn't have to happen! Fenris says I'm not allowed to write again until I can do so without tearing the page apart with the pen. Andraste's pyre. Teach enough to read, and suddenly he's got opinions about everything literary. I swear to the Maker. Second solace. Light drizzle today, enough to cut the heat. I'm huddled under a tarp on the stern deck and very grateful for it. Everyone else is below decks besides Isabella, the cowards. What little rain ever hurt anyone? One drop off an eave and Fenris hunches like an angry, bedraggled cat. He'd never survive a loathering spring. Isabella says we should reach Wycombe this evening. Aveline is to have posted letters for us there, we hope. Any news would do me good at this point. I can't stop thinking about Arana and Bowden and Sandal. We had plans for this, contingency ideas to make sure they were away safely, but until I hear from her and know... Enough. Worrying is nothing but borrowed misery. My mother taught me that. Where was I? We fought through Lowtown on the docks. Carver appeared in the middle of the fight like a gift from Andraste herself and told me that if I were to start any wars with Adam, he'd take me to task and no mistake. I won't lie. If the ferry had sunk on the way to the gallows, I wouldn't have minded overmuch. But it didn't, and we landed. There were abominations everywhere. Mages desperate and dying in scores. Templars, too, who attacked on sight, and Varric took a resounding crack to the skull that nearly robbed him from us before the real fighting even began. Thankfully, I had enough lyrium drafts on me to get him back into fighting shape and still be square after, and then we stormed the gallows in a fury that would have made Anders proud, if he hadn't become, you know, a riotous murderer. Is it fair for me to say that? How many have I killed over the years? Were they all as guilty as I hoped? We were pinned deep in the gallows. That's when I wrote the earlier entry, and we had nothing to do but distribute potion and wait for death to come. It was, dare I say, nice in some ways to speak to everyone at last, one by one, and say, well, not goodbye, but thank you, perhaps. Isabella stayed with me and did not leave. Meryl wanted to know if it was all a dream. Varric said he wasn't one for long goodbyes. Aveline said she never doubted me. Almost never. Which was nice to hear, since I was half certain I was about to make Donnick a widower. Forgive the smear on that last word. The ship dipped into a trough, and a great slop of rainwater fell from the edge of my tarp cover to the page. Still legible. Carver said it was good to be at my side again, the way a brother should be. And Fenris. I suppose I should just say that if Stinton fucking Forrester had been there, he'd have had no doubt of our relationship left. He stayed with me to help the mages, and I loved him for it. I asked, and he stayed. I never doubted he would come with me when I asked, and my heart aches for some inexplicable reason of that understanding. The last few sentences are scratched out. I love him. I know he loves me in return. That's all. That's enough. Later, pulling into the dock at Wycombe, still cool from the earlier rain. I had to stop earlier for lunch, and then Fenris and Carver wanted to discuss our plans with Varric. We have some now. Plans, I mean. Which is more than before, and I'm grateful to them for taking the lead here. It'll just depend on if Aveline's been able to send word. Anyway, Orsina lost his mind to blood magic and turned into an absolutely disgusting many-armed monstrosity that took 1,000 years to kill. I don't know why. I don't know. We killed the Templars that came so quickly, and we lost no one in the doing, and still when it was over he looked despair in the face and welcomed it, and he gave in. We killed him, and everything he knew died with him. He knew of Quentin. He knew. But enough. That's done. I can't change it now. We fought our way out to the courtyard again. The gallows cleared, and what mages survived huddled in a pitiful pile behind Carver's watchful back, and then Meredith came to meet us with curly-haired Cullen at her shoulder. He wanted to simply arrest me, he said, as if that would have been any better under Meredith's gauntleted thumbs. And she pulled a gleaming red sword from her back and slung it towards me, and even from across that little distance I could taste the iron ring of red lyrium baked into every inch of that blade. I heard Varric swear. I saw the madness take hold in Meredith's eyes when Cullen defied her order and relieved her of command, when she ordered them to kill me and they would not. I saw the power leap from the sword into the cobblestone of the courtyard and slither into the statues watching, the great guardians with their many faces and the twisted, tortured bronze slaves that Fenris misliked so many years ago. There's something deeply and ironically funny about that. That a penniless Ferelden refugee who came to the city with nothing but the clothes on her back and half a dead family 10 years ago somehow grew important enough that the city's erstwhile ruler wanted her dead among all others. Is this what they call making it? In any case, the statues came alive. We fought them, and they died? Is that the right word? I do wonder how deep her reach ran, if the great twins that guard the harbor mouth came alive too, and since they're fixed knee down in stone, settled for throwing stones at passing ships until the chains were raised. They all died, regardless, and at the end it was only Meredith and the red mad light of Lyrium as she quoted benedictions and called on the Maker to smite me dead where I stood. Why is this so difficult to write? She got me by the forehead, once, near the end. Had been caught up in a fight with one of the great hulking bronze slaves, its faceless head bearing down on me like a tidal wave as it fell in death. And the next thing I knew, I'd been snatched from behind, and Meredith had my head in one burning hand and her other hand, or at least the sword she held in it, thrust right through my gut. After all this time, journal, I will not lie to you, I was absolutely furious. After all I'd done for the city, after giving up a perfectly good kidney, how dare she take my other? How dare she give Fenris even an ounce more of grief? How dare she make enforcing the people's safety even one step harder on Aveline? It occurs to me as I write this that perhaps I should have simply been angry she stabbed me in the first place, but alas, where our hearts go, so too do our sorrows follow, etc. But thank Andraste, it was more a glancing blow, due mostly to one of Sandal's precious runes reinforcing the armor, and instead of skewering me clean through, she simply ripped out a bit of my side and went through fat and muscle only. Nothing vital. Not that Fenris was any more pleased by this, considering how ghost-clear and blinding blue he went as he came up behind her and swung his sword down on her neck. Not quite the impartial observer of the Arishok fight this time. It was enough. She dropped me. I turned my staff to the bladed end. I put it through her throat. She screamed, then, and cried out to the Maker, and she burned. She burned. On her knees, screaming upwards, and then she died. The sword withered into nothing and was gone, as beautiful as the sparks off a bonfire, and as brief. Cullen let us go. He could have stopped us if he wished. I was hardly in a position to do anything about it. Fenris was bleeding heavily from a blow to his forehead that had one eye clenched shut, and Varric's right shoulder was dislocated. Aveline's shield had broken clean in two and dangled from her arm. He could have stopped us. He didn't, and we fled. Isabella collected her crew from the docks once the ferry landed, rousing them from hammock and brothel, and we boarded without once returning to Lowtown, to Hightown, to anything. They were already raising the chain in the bay by the time we slipped across them. And here we are. Wycombe is lovely in the dark. I'm not allowed to go ashore per the various threats to my personage from various interested parties, but from the ship's rail I can see the candles gleaming in windows and across the streets, hear the calls of dock workers to each other and laughter spilling out of bars as they go home to their families. Green bunting hangs over most main streets, shining gently in the lamplight. A lovely town. A quiet town, at least so far. Carver hasn't come tumbling out of some tavern with half the village swarming like bees behind him, so I suppose they must be succeeding in their goals. All I can hope for, now. I gave what I had to Kirkwall. It wasn't enough. Maker and his blessed bride, how twisted is it that I still love that city despite its horrors? Third Solace. There is no entry for this date, only a series of letters, many times folded and unfolded, tucked into the crease. The first is from the captain of Kirkwall's guard, assuring the reader that her household is alive and well, and that guards have been posted around her home to defend it from looters and rioters, and that the city is in as much order as could be expected after such events. The second is from a household maid, insisting that the reader's home is being kept in a state ready for her return, that she herself is happy and healthy and safe, and that she has many friends looking after her in the meantime. The third is from the reader's uncle, recommending the reader stay away a little longer if she knows what's good for her, lest her long nose get cracked for poking in places it doesn't belong. All three letters have rippled stains along the edges, as if they have been dampened more than once. Sixth solace. A clear day. Cool. Beautiful. Light clouds and a clean eastern wind. The parting's come at last. I didn't want it to. Varric is to go back to Kirkwall. Meryl, too, to assist with the alienage and the elves there. And Carver must return to the Wardens. He's already lingered too long. He told me that helping start a war was one thing as far as his commanding officer was concerned, but being late to muster was something decidedly worse. Isabella will ferry them back to the city in a matter of days now that the worst of the fervor has been curtailed. I wanted to go with them desperately, but there are still flyers everywhere with my face on them. My name, and a price on my head. I told Fenris it was nice to be so wanted, and he only rolled his eyes. He will not go without me. I should feel guilty, I think, that he has given up everything he's built to stay here with me, but I don't. I love him, and I want him near me. Perhaps not quite so near as the hammocks in Isabella's ship forced us. That, I think, would strain even the most harmonious marriage on the continent. But when I said I would stay ashore and travel northward, he said without a moment's hesitation that he would come with me. I wanted to ask if he was sure. I know he grieves the loss of... damage to? His friendship with Sebastian. I wanted to ask if it was worth it. But his eyes were strong, green as glass and just as clear, boring into me like the outstretched hand of the Maker himself, and I knew to ask would only hurt us both. So I just kissed him instead, and let him hold me with our foreheads together for a little while. Until we could both breathe again and pretend the salt on our faces was from the spray the ocean threw against the side of the ship with every rocking swell. We will go back one day. I can feel it in my blood. For better or worse, Kirkwall is the forge that made me. It's as much a part of me as my bones and my magic. When it's safer, not safe. Because if I have learned nothing over 10 years, I have learned that city will never be safe. We will go back, because even if it is not safe, it is mine. For now, we will go north. Not too near Starkhaven, just in case Sebastian's rage still burns too brightly, but enough that the fires spreading out of Kirkwall are more likely to be embers instead. The Vinmark Mountains are eminently passable this time of year, and there are many small villages between here and Starkhaven where we might take shelter and rest. Wildervale, perhaps. Perhaps one of the hamlets outside the city, if we need be even safer. 10 years we spent in Kirkwall together. Fenris and me, and Aveline and Meryl and Varric, and Isabella, and Anders and Sebastian. Even Carver for the first little while. And again, later, when he could be spared from his duties. How many nights at the Hanged Man can I remember? How blur together in the memory of warm candlelight, terrible whiskey and worse stew, and laughter so loud it shook the rafters in Varric's suite. I leave my mother in Kirkwall, too. The house she grew up in and the one she returned to as a widow. Her ancestry marked out in Browning portraits hung along every wall and spidering genealogies tucked into the library shelves. The books Fenris used to learn to read are there, and the last bottle of Ferelden Ale Aveline gave me. Mother's rooms, and her ashes. I leave the foundry ash in Kirkwall. Darktown always smelled of it, especially in winter when the choke damp rose. Lowtown, too, when the wind was high and the foundries particularly hot. There's suffering seeded through every line of iron you ever made, and that I leave behind willingly and without rancor. The passage to Anders' clinic and its sticky key will stay a memory for me alone, still precious for all the pain of it now. Hightown I leave to you, Stinton fucking Forrester, and Lady Audrey and your awful husband, and to Jethin and the Rose, and to Aveline and Donick and the rest of the guard who will have to clean up after my mess. I'm sorry for the wreckage I've sown in my wake. If you give me long enough, I'll be back to claim it. Raise the walls again, Aveline, and brace the buttress against Sebastian's rage. There will be blood in those streets again, but if I have any say in it, it won't be Kirkwall's. Give my love to Arana, Meryl. Keep her safe, and Bowden and Sandal, wherever they've gone. Don't let any Orlesian merchants come and bully her. I'll be back. I'll bring her a new shawl when I come, and I'll take her to another members' show, if she wants. Meryl, watch over the alienage. They need you as much as the Menadal for your protection. Sebastian, be tempered. Don't let the anger swallow you whole. If nothing else, I know Elthena taught you how to move through grief. Keep Kirkwall safe for me, Varric. You're the only one I know who loves her as much as I do, and you're the only one I can trust to keep things running while I'm gone. Take as much of a percentage as you like from whatever you need of my funds. Void, take all of it. You've earned it and more. Isabella will bring me when we're ready. I know the port she sails for during a storm now. Anders. His name is scratched out. Anders, be well. Maker, be quenched, if not happy. And Fenris, I have nothing left for you, my darling, but all myself. You'll have to settle for me and be satisfied. My love is a brutal thing, more prone to killing than kindness. You knew this when you took me on. Let the thunder roll down around us as it will. I can bear anything so long as you stand beside me. I do love you, Fenris. You don't even need to tear my heart out to see how deep you're written in me. Call me Avis every once in a while, and you'll keep me in love the rest of my life. All right, all right. That's enough. The ship has raised anchor with a rush of green seawater, and the gulls are screaming, and Fenris keeps trying to steal my pen, so I'll wave the call off. A good day for a parting. Clear, sunny skies and a clean wind, even if Varric's too short for the rail and Isabella won't look back at me. At least Meryl and Carver are waving. All right! We've coin and food and a plan. More than I had the last time I fled my home. Fenris is with me, and that's enough. He's smiling at me even now, infinitely patient as I finish these last few words. How grateful I am. And he knows it, too. If the curled smile is any indication as he leans over my shoulder to read the last bits along with me. Avis, he says to me as he reads that passage, a bit surprised, though there's still open tenderness in his voice. That's enough. I'm ready. Whatever comes next, I'll meet it gladly. I'm ready. The end. Thanks for listening.